Chapter 43. It was one part practicality, a pinch of indecision, a dash of kindness, and four parts cowardice. Tia flicked on only the blue and superviolet lights as she came into the Prism's practice room again. She'd taken to training more and more here while she marshalled her courage to talk to Gav Grayling. Fine, while she avoided talking to Gav Grayling. She tried not to come here too much, but the practice room had become her haven. There were good memories here, and light controls, and mirrors, and privacy, all the necessary ingredients to practice light splitting. She tried not to come here too much, but she didn't try very hard. With the master cloak, invisibility had become stunningly simple. She put it on, opened herself to peril, and it did the rest, flawlessly. Ah, blessed, blessed invisibility. There were still things to be aware of. She was invisible, not silenced. She still left footprints. If she pulled a cloak over her eyes, she was blind herself, so in well-lit areas she had to stare down at her feet and only steal glimpses up, knowing her disembodied eyes might appear to anyone who happened to be looking in just the right place. The cloak was long enough to cover her feet, but any movement that displaced it, such as running or descending stairs, could expose her legs. Also, its length meant that it brushed the ground. Any dirt it picked up from the ground, it carried. Visibly. Similarly, if she didn't launder it regularly, the dust it picked up from the air slowly made it less effective. Of course, slaves did all the laundry in the Chromaria, and of course, Tia wasn't going to let the master cloak out of her sight, so she had to figure out ways to launder it herself. Sometimes in this very room. She'd even prepared her lies. The washboard was good for hand strength. Those incompetents had torn her cloak the last time. She kind of enjoyed a simple task like this. Weak lies, and she'd not had to use them yet. But after much practice, the cloak had become simply another tool. It enabled things impossible without it, and it had limitations, but it quickly became a known quantity. It wasn't a sword or spear that required years of study to master. It was more like a pair of boots. You figured out what grip they gave you, you broke them in, and then you forgot about them. What was more interesting for Tia than learning how to use it was trying to learn how it worked. She'd put on a single red light in the practice room and use the cloak, then extend her will into the cloak to discern how it was splitting that red light. Then she'd repeat with orange, then yellow, then green, then blue, for hours. It had yielded interesting discoveries over the months of practice since Kip left, if not the ones she was looking for. First, with a cloud of paral gas surrounding her, Tia became the next best thing to a super chromat. The gas itself was a filter, like polarized glass. It filtered blues into the perfect blue for making blue Luxin, filtered reds into the perfect red for making red Luxin, and so forth. If she held a bubble of paral gas perfectly so that it covered one eye, she could look at any Luxin and tell how well it had been drafted. If it looked and felt exactly the same to each eye, it had been drafted perfectly, and therefore probably by a super chromat. She was sure there were handy applications for her discoveries, but she wasn't sure what they were, and there was no one she could really ask. The only one she'd really come up with was that if she remembered to draft a paral cloud, she could now differentiate red and green. She still couldn't see them as different, though, so it was a cold comfort. One day she was sitting on the floor of the practice room, always fearful of interruptions. She'd run through the obstacle course a few times first to work up a sweat, and now she sat as if winded, wearing her skimpiest workout attire. The point was to have as much skin exposed as possible. She had to feel the colours, and damn it if that wasn't taking a lot of practice. So she sat on the floor, nearly naked, but sweaty, so that if anyone came in, she could pass for someone just cooling from her exertions. This new life of hers was always lies and preparations for lies. She had her eyes closed and a headband functioning as a blindfold, every sense attuned to the blue, perhaps, light, when she heard a hiss as of escaping gas. Her eyes snapped open and she pushed the headband back up her into unruly hair. She grabbed her tunic and looked toward the door. Nothing. She widened her eyes to Parol and saw Parol gas dissipating. Tia jumped to her feet, pulling on her tunic, eyes darting to the master cloak hanging on its hook by the door. She expected that Parol gas to come questing out toward her. It had to be Master Sharp, looking to see if she was in the room. But it did nothing instead. She moved to the door and heard only retreating footsteps. She pulled on long trousers and, after one moment of indecision, grabbed her cloak. There was someone disappearing down the hall, not Master Sharp. But at her feet, there was a wineskin. Its spout had been pushed under the door, and then it had been stomped flat, expelling the paral gas within. Tia picked it up. In tiny script, but undoubtedly Master Sharp's hand, there was one word. Follow. Oh, hells. Here it was. Finally. Swallowing hard once, Tia ran on silent feet after the man. She caught sight of him quickly. She'd been right. It wasn't Murder Sharp. Just a slave. He had a paral mark floating above him, invisible to anyone's eyes except Tia's. The man walked to the servants' stairs and up. Tia followed at a discreet distance. In the entrance hall, his paral mark abruptly blinked out. It happened, of course. Paral was so fragile that the slightest brush would usually shatter it, and that was especially true of the lighter-than-air gel marks appended to targets. Tia kept the man in sight, but within moments the mark bloomed over a slave woman. What the hell? Tia followed the woman as she headed outside. Tia put on her dark spectacles so she could continue glancing in peril intermittently in the bright light without blinding herself. Mercifully, she didn't look out of place with them on. It was a bright, blustery, cool day. Distant clouds dotted the heavens like harbingers of the autumn coming on. Just after the lily's stem, the peril mark passed from the slave woman to a merchant heading down a side street. This time Tia was ready. Marking someone with peril required that the peril drafter be nearby, but Sharp was either being terribly devious, or he was using his own shimmer cloak, because Tia never saw him. Eventually she ended up in front of a tiny run-down house in the Tyrian quarter with a peril ENTER written on the door. Drawing a surreptitious dagger to conceal behind a wrist, she knocked. It opened, and Sharp grinned at her through his exquisite white teeth. He beckoned her inside, but made her step close past him. Oh, Hollum, how he made her skin crawl. He sniffed as she slipped past him. He closed the door.
Are we forgetting our mint? He asked. Not to mention the parsley.
He took her face in his hands, his manicured fingers on each of her cheeks, angling her chin up, a gesture all too intimate for her taste. He smelled her breath. Grimaced as if she'd farted straight in his face, slapped her gently. The gentleness made it almost worse.
You know what we do, Adrastia, he said. Stealth. Stealth is what we do. Well, it's the necessary building block for what we do. You know what's not stealthy? Haltonsis. Haltonsis isn't sneaky, Tia. Might as well chew garlic.
He'd meant halitosis. Moron. But Tia didn't say anything. Moron Sharp might be, but he was a dangerous one. Moron Sharp. Tia almost grinned at her new mental nickname for him. She couldn't be afraid of someone she had a stupid nickname for, right?
What's that? He asked.
I did it on purpose. I've been wondering if you were ever going to check in with me again, so I thought it'd be funny if, when you did, I had stinky breath.
Cute, he said. Don't be cute.
I'm sorry, he slugged her in the stomach. She dropped, gasping.
He grabbed a handful of her short hair and drew back a fist, but then he paused. He pushed her lips around, looking at her teeth.
Ah, that's right, he said.
He ran a tongue around his own teeth and let her go.
Sit.
There was only one small chair and a small bed in this room. There was a coil of rope hanging off the back of the chair. All Tia's old fears came alive at the sight of it, but she sat. What could she do against Sharp anyway? He bound her to the chair expertly, quietly whistling to himself. Excellent whistler. After he finished, he looked at himself in a tiny mirror on the wall. He checked his dentures, mostly, moving his jaw this way and that, smiling broadly or just cocking his lip up to reveal a tooth in a faux grin, looking at the teeth from different angles.
We have a problem, he said.
Not turning from the mirror, he touched a dog tooth with his tongue.
You didn't tag anyone for me to kill.
Tia had known this was coming, had been dreading it for a long time.
Why? Lose your nerve? Or are you not quite what you represented to the Order? Perhaps a spy?
He asked,
as if inquiring after the weather. So Sharp had been intended to be the murderer if she'd tagged someone. That suggested that he was the only other shadow that the Order had on Big Jasper.
"I did tag someone," Tia said.
"Did the assassin never find him?"
"That's impossible."
"Did you tag him poorly?"
"Perhaps you tagged him poorly on purpose."
Of course, this gambit had meant casting aspersions on the skills of whoever followed her. Now that Murder Sharp had suggested it was he, that got dangerous.
"No, but I did try to be tricky. I wanted to see how good my tail was. I didn't know it was going to be you."
Sharp stopped looking at his teeth. He turned around, and for an instant Tia thought she saw fear in his eyes. He was, Tia realized, terrified of anything that would threaten his value in the old man's eyes.
"I'd been up for 2 days straight, but you were only out of my sight for perhaps an hour."
"Surely not the night of my vigil," Tia asked.
"Anat's cunt," Sharp said.
And that gave Tia another peek at one of Sharp's cards. Sharp himself didn't have sources among the few blackguards who'd been around on her vigil. That was good to know. She was always slowly compiling a list of blackguards she knew she could trust. Of course, Sharp's not having a source wasn't the same as the Order's not having a source, but every little bit of information helped.
"I wasn't gone long," Tia said, "because I changed my mind." "Wait, you took the tag off?" Sharp asked.
He sounded angry and yet relieved, too. If he'd missed a tag because she'd removed it, it wasn't his fault, was it? On the one hand, it was nice to see him scared. On the other, it was good to see him relieved. On the third, impossible hand, Tia was crossing a person Murder Sharp was terrified of. Tia said,
"The rules made it all pointless, didn't they?"
"Bitter girl, hateful, spiteful, right?"
"What rules? I couldn't kill anyone important.
I mean, I briefly considered killing someone who'd irritated me, who was close to someone important, like that asshole slave Grinwoody, but I figured there was a good chance the old man would take that as me being impudent, if not disobedient, so why risk it? And then I thought that if I wanted anyone who wasn't that important dead, I can do it myself now. I mean, it would be the easiest if I have the shimmer cloak, which I'd like to start learning to use better, thanks, but even without it, I could start throwing peril crystals into someone's blood until they die. No one can find it except you, so no one can catch me. So if I've got a favour coming to me from the Order, I'm going to save it for when it matters."
"One doesn't save up favours from the old man. You obey or you take the consequences," Sharp scowled. "He told me how to deal with you if you'd been disobedient or if you'd betrayed us, but this is something different. He'll be irritated, but I guess he'll have to deal with it himself."
"Himself? What's that mean?"
"I'm leaving," Murder Sharp said.
By the way he said it, it was clear he meant for a long time.
"Where are you going? I thought you were going to train me." "It's war. Plans change. The old man isn't pleased, but there's word that there's a third eye."
"What's that? What's that mean?"
"A prophetess. A true prophetess. Apparently for a long time she was safely out of the way on Sears Island, where she couldn't tell anyone anything, but now she's out in the satrapies, helping the Chromeria with the war. You might be able to guess how important someone who can see the future would be to either side."
"Pretty damn," Tia said.
"That's right, so that's where I come in."
"Isn't it going to be a bit hard to get close to someone who can see the future? I mean, you'd figure she'd protect herself, right?" Sharp sucked spit through his dentures.
"Smart one, aren't you?"
Shit, Tia was supposed to be playing dumb.
"I'm not trying to be wise," Tia said, placating.
He might punch her again. If not, do something worse.
"The cloaks," Sharp said.
"The cloaks?"
"Her powers are all connected to light, turns out. The Order's known about her kind for centuries. She can't see the future, past or present, or anyone who wears the cloaks. Of course, the seers know that we know, which is why they usually stay on their island sequestered away from our blade. Gavin Guile brought an end to that, so I guess we can blame this on him. But them seers gotta know their place."
Tia felt sick to her stomach.
"So what's the plan?"
"Kidnap her and sell her to the highest bidder. Hold her somewhere and make her work for you." Maybe Tia shouldn't give them ideas.
"Too dangerous. How do you outwit someone who can see the future? You can't. We gotta kill her."
It shouldn't have shocked Tia, this blithe talk of assassinating someone. It was what she was here for, after all. to learn, to become part of the plans, and then upend them on the order's head. But he was going to kill this woman. It was just work to him. Thanks, Tyr said.
Thanks
for telling me, like you trust me.
Eh,
he shrugged, and finally started working at the knots to untie her.
It's lonely work. No one to talk to. No one to appreciate it when you've done good, you know. Shadows usually work in twos, maybe for just that. So, you know, I asked that you be promoted to be my second.
Really? Tyr said. She was oddly flattered.
The old man said you aren't ready yet. It's why you won't get to keep the fox cloak, at least not unless he's got a job for you.
What? I earned that cloak. Inside, though, Tyr was delighted. As long as they thought she had no cloak at all, they wouldn't be on the lookout for her doing the things that only a cloak allowed her to do. Being known not to have a cloak made her invisible to the Order.
He wants to hide himself from her, of course. He needs the cloak for that.
So does that mean I'm never getting the cloak back? He's going to wear it all the time.
We know she needs direct sunlight to do her seeing, searing. So if you do jobs, you'll likely go after sunset and have to return the cloak before dawn. If you do well after she's dead, you'll get to keep your own then. Your own fault, though. You should have found the other cloak they recovered.
Tyr raised her hands.
It wasn't there. I know. We believe you about that. We've had the White's room turned inside out, looking for hiding spots. We went through all your shit, too. Best guess is that she hid it somewhere and didn't tell anyone where before she died. The old man thinks she kept the fox cloak to study it, thinking that no one could use a cloak that short. Or maybe she knew about the cloaks and hoped to teach you how to use it herself someday. Loved to study things, she did.
Whoa, Tyr said. She never said anything to me about that. Swear.
Death does tend to interrupt plans. It's why we do what we do. Anyway, the old man will be handling you directly from now on. I'll fill you in on your drops and how he'll signal you. Or how you can signal him in an emergency.
He did, using much of the same tradecraft that Tyr already knew from working with Karis. It all left Tyr's mind whirling, though. She'd be meeting, directly, with the old man of the desert. After so long of nothing, it was hope. She might actually cut off the order at the head. If she was smart, she'd need to do it before the third eye was killed. In the meantime, she'd have to pass word about all of this to the Iron White.
There's just one more thing, Murder Sharp said. You're still pretty useless with Parol. It's my fault, I know. I haven't been able to come around and teach you like I should, but it's war. Everything is different now. Nothing is as we'd like. In the basement here is the solution to your problem.
Solution? Tyr asked. Her chest tightened.
There's a slave down there. An old man. Won't be missed. Practice on him. The paralysis pinches, the lung clots, the seizures. When you've learned as much as you can before your next shift, kill him. With Parol, if you can. There'll be a new slave down there every few weeks. Do try to learn fast. Murder practice ain't like other practice. Everybody we have to get rid of puts someone's life in danger.
And then he left.
Murder practice. Dear Orholm.
Tyr looked at the doorway to the basement stairs as if it were the mouth of hell itself. She reached to squeeze the vial of oil she kept at her neck, but it was no longer there.